New York City dealing a blow to ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft. The city council on Wednesday voted to cap the number of for-hire vehicle licenses for a year, and Mayor Bill de Blasio said he intends to sign the bills into law. It's the first cap by any major U.S. city, and part of the package of measures also includes setting a minimum wage for drivers.
An apology from the director of a Japanese medical school that deliberately slashed women's entrance exam scores to prevent them becoming doctors. A practice that went on for at least a decade. Tokyo Medical University uncovered the problem in an internal investigation into whether bribery was involved in the admission of the son of a senior official. His score had been boosted unfairly, it found. Women in Japan face an uphill battle in employment, especially returning to work after having children. It's one reason for the country's falling birth rate, and it was found to be a reason why school officials manipulated women's scores.
Danish jeweler Pandora seems to have lost its luster. First came profit warnings and 400 job cuts. Then on Thursday, CEO Anders Kolding Friis was fired. Reuters' Stina Jacobsen says that went down well with investors as the news saw shares rise by 9%. The backbone of Pandora's business is its silver charm bracelets, but the company says sales have dropped in recent months. Investors have criticized Friis for botching a turnaround plan.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August 10th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We made it to Friday, thank goodness, TGIF. And on our broadcast today, our Friday regulars are here with us. Paul Nolte is in the house. We're going to bring him in a few minutes, a few seconds. And Brian Summers will be with us a little bit later in the broadcast from skiff.com, talking about airline and aviation news. So lots going on in the program. But first, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Shares are lower in Asia today, tracking losses on Wall Street, despite the release of data showing Japan's economy and its long-time expansion in the last quarter apparently has resumed. The economy there, Japan's Nikkei index lost about 1.5%, though. Hong Kong's Hang Seng index gave up about 1% as well. The Shanghai Composite was down as well. Futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off about 126 points right now. NASDAQ futures are off more than 0.5%, and S&P futures are off more than 0.5% as well. And in Europe this morning, markets are in the red. FTSE, DAX, and the CAC all lower. The DAX in Germany almost by 2% now. The CAC in France off almost 1.5%. Oil is trading at $66.79 a barrel, which is down about 2 cents. A couple of stories, headlines before we begin this morning. One of them involves corporate boards and Congress. The indictment of Congressman Chris Collins, the Republican from New York, on insider trading charges is drawing new attention to the freedom members of Congress have to serve on corporate boards or to buy and sell stock in industries that they're responsible for overseeing. Collins has denied any wrongdoing stemming from his involvement in communications or a biotechnology company and pharmaceutical company based in Australia. He was the company's largest shareholder and was also on the company's board. Members of Congress are not prohibited from serving on corporate boards as long as they don't receive any compensation for doing so. But legal and ethics experts say it's an arrangement that can create the potential for conflicts of interest. Now, let's begin front and center this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is one of our regular guests. He's here every Friday. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Where do we begin this morning? Maybe the biggest economic news of the week. What would that be?
Well, you know, interesting, it's going to be today. It'll be the CPI numbers. But I think really the big news of the week, and it kind of dovetails with the congressional discussion here in Collins, was Tesla. In the buyback or going private of Tesla that got tweeted out by Elon Musk kind of broke a lot of the rules of how this information gets disseminated. And so you're seeing, in both of these cases, I think, a little bit of a flaunting of the rules here. And I think there's going to be an investigation now coming from the SEC at some point as to whether it's insider information, the board knew it a couple of days earlier. Is he doing this on a whim? Does he really have the monetary backing to make this happen? Or is he just trying to kill the people that are short the stock? So it's kind of an interesting dynamic here, something that we've not seen before, but we have not seen a lot of interesting things out of Elon Musk in the past. I mean, he's definitely a very different CEO.
What are the potential hazards here? I mean, is this a prison time that you could get for doing something like this?
Well, considering that much of the time that we saw this in the 07-08 period, I think the only person that's really ever served time was Martha Stewart. When you look at this, what makes it interesting is there are an awful lot of investors that have very divergent and completely opposite opinions. One is the company is a great company and it's going to do great things, and the stock at 400 is going to be somewhere in the thousands. There's others that look at the balance sheet and the cash flow and the fact that they're burning cash at a regular basis and constantly coming to the financial markets to get money, that eventually this company is going to implode and go away. And Elon Musk is obviously, one of his comments is not having to kowtow to Wall Street. And in dealing with the short sellers here, I think this was one of his ways of getting back, if you will, at Wall Street and kind of thumbing his nose. But what he's going to have to either do it privately or through the public markets to raise cash, because they need cash to continue their operations.
And if he did something wrong here, if they find that he did do something wrong, the feds are not hesitant to go after somebody popular.
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, he would be the poster child for this type of activity. And, as the CEO and certainly somebody that's on, out and on Twitter regularly, a lot of that gets scrutinized, but certainly not going through what we would consider the normal channels to disseminate what previously was non-public information to make it public. Twitter's has not usually been the way to go.
This has been a strange week for some of this stuff. Here in our own house, we've had a situation where Tribune Media Company has ended the merger agreement with Sinclair Broadcasting, and their $1 billion lawsuit against Sinclair really kind of shows what goes on behind the scenes in some of these cases. The allegation is that Sinclair had a breach of contract because it didn't stand up to its side of the deal and was sort of reckless behind the scenes, allegedly.
Yeah, and it negotiating in good faith and all of those types of things. We see a lot of those when you have mergers that are getting announced, especially if it's an acrimonious merger. When you take a look at those types of situations where companies coming in and buying out somebody else, a lot of times that negotiation that goes on, it's very difficult to ascertain until well after the fact what's been going on. And a lot of those contracts are written in such a way that if they break the contract and the merger does not go through, there's millions of dollars that get paid back to the company for a failed merger. So there's a lot of money that's on the table, whether the merger goes through, and in many cases, if the merger does not go through. So, yeah, you will see many lawsuits that spring out of actions like that.
Yeah, and this was a week for failed mergers. For other reasons, Albertsons, the company that owns Jewel Osco, decided it was not going to do its Rite Aid merger for whatever reason there. Mm-hmm. I think it wasn't a good fit, I think, was that situation.
Yeah, and there's some people that have, to take the Tesla deal to another level, there's some people that are drawing parallels to the Kirk Kerkorian takeover of Chrysler that was failed, the AOL merger in 2000, and maybe this is another sign of a market top where, we have CEOs or we have companies that have these super big deals that kind of mark the end of an era. I think it's way too early for that discussion, but some people are making notes now that are looking at some of these past instances that that mark the end of an era and are looking at Tesla as another potential for that happening.
Okay, Paul, hang on. We're going to continue our conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, our regular Friday conversation about the economy and our portfolios.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors weighing the trade dispute between Washington and Beijing pushed down the Dow Jones 74 points yesterday to 25,509. The S&P 500 finished the day 4 points lower, but the NASDAQ composite rose 3.5. Spotify is getting a boost from Samsung. The music streaming service saw its stock price jump about 5% after the announcement that it was teaming with Samsung to put Spotify front and center on products like Samsung's phones and its newly announced Galaxy Home smart speaker. Profits at Yelp are also on the rise. The online reviews company was boosted by a 21% surge in its ad revenues. The company reported a net income of nearly $11 million in the second quarter of the year. Home loans cost a little less this week. Mortgage buyer Freddie Mac says the average interest rate on a 30-year fixed slipped slightly to 4.59%. Rates also are down just a bit for 15-year mortgages. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management here on The Opening Bell. And Paul, some news that I thought was interesting. We've been talking about the trade war week after week. And yesterday, a UBS analyst is predicting that if this continues at this pace or worsens, companies could hit, their profit could take a 40% hit soon.
Yeah, and that's one of the concerns that Wall Street in general has, but has been ignored so far in the marketplace. And part of the reason why we're very near all-time highs now, where the markets have kind of ignored this news and figure it will be going away. Mid-July, we've got the second round implemented. The end of this month, we'll get another round, and that's a very significant. That's the $100-150 billion in tariffs are going to hit in August. We will start to see that impact corporations probably later in the third quarter, but most more likely is in the fourth quarter earnings numbers that we'll get in January. We'll see it hit a lot of the economic data as we get through the holiday season. So, as we've talked about in the past, there's a couple things that companies can do when faced with higher prices. One is to eat that cost, and as the analyst indicated, they'll take their own margins down. It'll impact their earnings per share, which means then we probably wind up dropping the stock price on the marketplace because it's not worth as much. They're not earning as much. The second thing that they can do is pass those costs along to the consumer in higher prices. And so the producer prices that we saw yesterday, and then we'll get the consumer price index out later on this morning, those will be very important to keep an eye on. If we see those pick up, the implication is then the Fed will probably raise rates. And right now, the betting is they will raise rates 2 more times this year, 4 total, and 4 more times next year. So that likelihood of another full percentage point increases getting higher for next year. Higher interest rates generally are not good for the equity markets.
Consumer price index numbers out today, this morning. I think the last report we saw was the prices were going up at the fastest pace they were in 8 years.
Yeah.
Do we expect to continue that today? See more of that today?
I think we will. You know, and the fact that it's running at the hottest rate in 8 years, I think we have to take with a grain of salt, realize that they've been suppressed for so long. We're still not to an average consumer price index level or an average inflation rate, say, over the last 40 years or so. We're still well below that. So, but the trend is what Wall Street and what a lot of analysts look at, and that trend is certainly higher. The tariffs are not going to help that and are going to probably push that higher still. And again, part of the reason why the Fed will be a little bit more active than I think Wall Street is currently guessing they will be.
And so, in other words, the little bit of wage gains that I saw in my paycheck last week are gone this week.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's and really when we take a look at wages, and we're all very excited that the wage growth is at its best level in 5 or 6 years, too. But you have to take out the inflation numbers and see what it is on an after-inflation basis. And it has been around zero for a long period of time. In the late 90s, we had wage gains that were well above the rate of inflation. But really, since 2000, 2002 or so, it's bounced around between negative and slightly positive. So the average worker over the last 18 years or so has barely kept pace with rising prices.
And, you know, we keep beating this like a dead horse over, but after the jobs report last week, and we keep seeing how tight the labor market is, at some point this wall has to break, doesn't it?
It should. And it's, you know, and again, it depends on the makeup of the jobs. You know, we've seen manufacturing pick up nicely over the last 2-3 years. Those tend to be higher wage paying or higher paying jobs. We've also seen the services sector, so hotels, restaurants, et cetera. Those have created an awful lot of jobs, but those tend to be very low-paying jobs. So, again, when you're offsetting one with the other, that's why we're kind of stuck in that middle ground. So we would still like to see the higher wage jobs really take off here, and we're unfortunately just not. We've lost a lot of our technical skills to fill some of those jobs, and that's creating an issue for us right now.
All right, Paul, how again can people reach you if they want to have personal one-on-one time with you?
Yeah, they can drop me an email, and they can do that at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and I'd be happy to send around some notes to people.
All right, Paul, we'll be happy to talk to you again next Friday, and have a good weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Delivered by ChicagoInno.com. The second TransTech Summit will take place October 20th at Groupon's headquarters. It will feature workshops in media, design, and business technologies. Founded last year, the TransTech Summit will have speakers, an online job fair, a networking mixer, and live streaming for those unable to attend. McDonald's new flagship location in River North, which opened Thursday, is equipped with all the high-tech offerings customers expect today. Their self-order kiosks, mobile orders, and payments and delivery. And Cars.com, the Chicago-based online car marketplace, announced Thursday that it has hired Matthew Gold as its chief strategy officer. He will be responsible for evolving and expanding the company's growth strategy and leading its new business development initiatives. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. A new concern about batteries in on aircraft and fires that could start from those batteries and the ability of airlines to put out those fires. Brian Summers is with us this morning for our regular Friday conversation. Brian is airline business reporter for Skift.com and is with us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, this story's concerning. New information that perhaps some of these battery fires could get out of hand.
Yeah, we've known for a long time that lithium batteries and airplanes don't mix real well. You'll know that on an airplane and a cruise ship and lots of places like this, people are very, very worried about fires. And the problem is that these lithium batteries can catch fire and it would be hard to put them out. Apparently, regulators had thought that maybe a single battery that caught fire in the cargo hold could get put out by the fire suppression system. But we've seen some new studies within the past couple of weeks that have said, maybe not. Maybe a single lithium battery fire could bring down an airplane, which is very scary. You know, airlines would much prefer that passengers bring lithium batteries into the cabin. Unfortunately, we have seen some pretty small fires start because of these batteries in the cabins. Flight attendants are trained to put them out. Everybody can see them. It's going to be scary for everyone. But it's probably not a disaster. The problem is when these batteries are out of sight.
And one of the concerns I saw in reading a story is that there may be other things that could catch fire once the batteries catch fire, and that would overwhelm the suppression system. Is that generally the threat, or is this simply a battery
threat?
Yeah, I guess it's not the batteries themselves. It's the batteries combining with something like an aerosol can that would be in the cargo hold and would become very flammable, and a disaster would happen.
So what's going to happen here moving forward? Are there going to be any changes to rules, or is something in the works in that line?
It's interesting, Steve, because I can't tell that anything is imminent. Some of the airlines themselves are trying to keep people from checking too many lithium batteries. You may have noticed several months ago, most of the major U.S. airlines came out and said they weren't really going to allow these luggage that have lithium batteries in them to be checked. So you'd have to bring them into the cabin, or you'd have to prove that you could take the battery out if you wanted to check them. The problem is, you know, we'd like to live in a world where an airline could ban lithium batteries from checked luggage, but people are absent-minded. Nobody knows the rules. How do you know what's in the bag? It's really tough. So I don't know that there's a clear-cut answer yet.
Another cool story out there is has to do with Qantas Airlines hiring a professor to help us beat jet lag. This is a cool story.
Yes, Qantas has hired a professor to help passengers beat jet lag. Qantas in March launched its longest ever flight, and believe it or not, its first flight nonstop to Europe, because Australia is so far from Europe. They're flying from Perth on Australia's west coast to London. There are actually some longer flights out there, but it's a little bit more than 17 hours, so it's a long way. And Qantas wants to persuade passengers that they actually do want to take this flight. So it's on a Boeing 787, and they have this jet lag expert. He's a legitimate guy. As you say, he's an academic. And he's working with Qantas to make passengers feel better. So he's planning the menus. One thing that they're doing is they're having some meal options with high levels of tryptophan and carbohydrates. And those produce melatonin and serotonin. And the idea is 4 hours after you eat, you'll feel a little bit more tired than you would have before. He's recommending passengers don't drink too much alcohol, stay away from chili peppers, that they don't have caffeine, especially at the wrong times. Anybody that has flown on a Boeing 787, even say an American Airlines one out of Chicago, knows that these planes have really fancy mood lighting. And the flight attendants can try their best to make it seem like morning or night. But a lot of times the flight attendants don't know what the cabin lighting is supposed to be. So this expert is working with Qantas so that the lighting is right at all times of the day on the flight. Now, the follow-up to this, of course, is do any of the passengers take his advice? He's not sure. I'm not sure. We've all been on a plane, maybe not for 17 hours, but for a long time. We get tired, we get cranky, and we go for the potato chips, we go for the beer, we go for the wine. We want to make ourselves feel better in that moment. And when we get to London or wherever we're going, we actually feel much worse. Willpower is tough.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, one of the things the story makes clear is there's no cure for jet lag, so you have to sort of attack it from the sides.
Yes, absolutely. It's tough to do, I will tell you. I actually had lunch with this academic when I was in Australia a couple of months ago. So he taught me all the things that I was supposed to do, and I promptly flew from Sydney to Los Angeles and ignored all of them because I wanted the beer, I wanted the food that was bad for me, and of course I felt awful when I got to Los Angeles.
So what are the next steps here? Are we going to see more active measures by Qantas to encourage us to follow these rules, or will there be some sort of technology that helps us?
Well, he's an academic, so he would like to produce some academic-worthy research, some legitimate stuff from the plane. He's planning to put sensors on some of Qantas's passengers. They are going to be volunteers, don't worry. And he's going to measure, or he hopes to measure, what people do when they're on the airplane, how they sleep, what they do when they're awake, whether they walk around a lot as they're supposed to, whether they're sedentary. I think they're also going to keep a journal of what they did before and after the flight, because that's very important as well. And he hopes to produce something, as I said, academic quality research. One thing that is hilarious and an anecdote that he tells all the time is they were doing a feasibility study of whether it's even possible to put these sensors on passengers. So they started out with about 20 volunteers just to see if it would work. And One guy on the 17-hour flight they measured, he didn't take a step for the entire flight. This professor told me that, yes, the sensor was working. He just didn't move.
Brian, this has been kind of a complaint of mine from time to time when I travel. Sometimes you get on a plane and it's cold. Sometimes you get on a plane, it's so hot you can't even breathe. But there may be an app for that soon.
Well, there's going to be something resembling an app. Believe it or not, there are no federal rules for how hot or how cold an airplane can be. Generally, this is not a big deal in the air. In the air, it's not hard to regulate an airplane's temperature. Sometimes people may not like it, but it's not dangerous. It's more of an issue on the ground. And as you say, the Association of Flight Attendants, which is the union that represents United's flight attendants and also Alaska's and some others, has created an app that will allow people to report back what the temperature is on an airliner when they get on. The idea is that this union is upset that some of the planes are too hot and too cold, particularly too hot, especially on summer days like now, and that passengers and flight attendants are in danger. So they'd like people to go to the app, say, okay, I think it's 88 degrees on this plane, it's dangerous, and report back. Eventually, the flight attendant union wants the government to create a regulation and basically force airlines to keep the temperature all the time between about 75 and 65 degrees. But that may not happen anytime soon. We're not in a culture of big new regulations in Washington. People have probably noticed that.
Yeah, and I guess there's a couple of things that could happen. I mean, on the on one side, you could have perhaps a flight attendant passing out or a passenger passing out, getting dizzy or whatever. But then on the other side, you could have some people getting so hot that they start fighting with each other.
No, it is a real problem. Again, it's an isolated problem. It doesn't happen that much. It happens on the ground. But the flight attendant union says they fear things like fatigue or dizziness to even worse things like heat exhaustion or heat stroke.
All right, Brian, good chatting with you as always. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is airline business reporter for Skift.com on Twitter at Skift. And you can follow Brian as well at Brian Summers on Twitter.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are off about 94 points on the Dow, headed to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off about a half a percent as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And as we take a look at the grain market yesterday, a red screen with wheat, corn, and soybeans all moving lower for the day. The wheat contract down 6.25. The corn contract traded down 2.5 cents. And soybeans traded down 6.25 cents. And in the livestock trade yesterday, we finally got a rally in the hog market. The nearby October lean hog contract was up the $3 daily limit on the close, but cattle traded lower for the day. It's a busy weekend. County fairs all over the country, and later this morning I'll be heading for Boone County Fairgrounds just north of Belvedere. I'll be there today to visit with fairgoers at the Boone County Fair. And, of course, tomorrow the Arlington Million, the big event at the Arlington Park Racecourse. And we'll be attending that. And then next Tuesday, well, yesterday the Illinois State Fair opened in Springfield. And so this weekend there are two state fairs within traveling distance. The Wisconsin State Fair, West Allis, will wind up this weekend, but going through Sunday. And then the Illinois State Fair started yesterday. And Tuesday is Salute to Agriculture Day, so I'll be at the Illinois State Fair to MC the Salute to Agriculture brunch, and then the sale of the Grand Champion. So come on along, Steve. We'll eat a lot of corn dogs and pork chop sandwiches.
You know, it's a hard choice to make. But I guess we could fit all of it in if we did it strategically. We could fit in the Boone County and then the Illinois State Fair, all of that together. Maybe even drive up to Wisconsin too. We could fit it all in.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is the Wisconsin State Fair is closer to the Chicago area than the Illinois State Fair. So a lot of folks go across the border, and the trademark food at the Wisconsin State Fair is the cream puff. They make thousands of them during the fair, and everybody gets whipped cream on their shirts and on their faces, and they spend the rest of the day at the fair trying to clean it off, but it's good.
Yeah. Orrin, while we have a couple seconds here, let's talk about, I know we touch base with you every week about where we stand on trade and tariffs. Anything new in this area today?
No, just that the NAFTA negotiators continue to talk, and the Canadian and Mexican negotiators say, we're going to get this done within a month or two. U.S. negotiators are not quite that confident, but I think they're making progress. The big issue, of course, is content of automobiles manufactured in U.S., Canada, and Mexico. And as far as the tariffs, a lot of talk, but not much happening in that area, except we continue to play the game that I say, my dad is tougher than your dad, and that's what we kind of do when we go back and forth on trade. But no significant changes this past week.
All right. Orrin, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Okay, very good, Steve.
All right, Orrin Samuelson, make sure you tune into the morning show tomorrow morning as well, 5 to 6 a.m. right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August the 10th. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes July Consumer Price Index this morning. We'll also get earnings from Meredith, one of the earnings companies that are reporting quarterly earnings, second quarterly earnings. We'll also get a Canadian report on jobs. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Friday, August the 10th.